南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
So what is meaning? What do you mean by meaning? On and on and on. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about, I think it's important, you know, we do a lot of studying on this channel. We read and I discuss many of, if I'm trying to discuss all of Nichiren's writings and Shakyamuni. And from the very start, Shakyamuni was very clear that, and certainly this is a preoccupation of Mahayana Buddhism especially, is that as humans who are full of habit energy and who like to possess and own everything, we tend to look at study as an accumulation of words, the order of words, depending on how you study, right? We glom on to certain ideas that are formed out of rhetoric. The way we say something is just as important, if not more important, than what we're actually saying. But there's a clue in that. And it's a clue that we often negate listening to. And that is that the words themselves are not the information. That the information is in the meaning of these constructions of rhetoric that we use to try to communicate. But we give words lots of power. We think when we say a word that encapsulates the billions of thoughts we're having in our mind that get articulated in a word. But they're very poor conveyors of that entire plethora of memories and ideas and tastes and feelings and emotions and nuances of our thoughts, not our words, but our thoughts. And we just cavalierly throw out these words as though, do you get it? Do you know what I mean? And then as listeners, we're sympathetic and we want to belong. And so when somebody tells us something, whatever the words are our only clue as to what someone is trying to communicate to us. And very quickly, fast as the speed of light, our minds is assembling this rhetoric, looking at the facial expressions, the way the eyes are, and convey the body language, all of it. And we assume, yeah, that relates to ding, 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 ka-ching, I know what you mean. But you really have very little idea of what someone means, no matter how rudimentary or elevated, eloquent their language and rhetoric is. Some speakers are so gifted in constructing sentences and paragraphs that you feel, oh, certainly, not only do I understand what they mean, but I'm actually growing, understanding, getting smarter just because I'm capable of keeping up with what they're saying. right? Meaning is such a fluid and momentary thing. And if you look at the history of man, which is a blip in the history of the universe, and you know by man, I mean all of us, human beings. You know, I think of my little dog. And I'm not sure, but I suspect that when she awakens in the morning, she's not overwhelmed with ideas about what the day will bring, why she's waking up again, why she finds herself where she is. I don't think any of those kinds of concerns occupy her. She either needs to go to the bathroom or is hungry and needs to be fed or wants to find a place to relax and do nothing. Just instant gratification things. Not a whole lot of cerebration going on. This, I think we can agree, is a uniquely human preoccupation. That word that I detest, the why. Right? Every morning, it's here again. All the things that I have to do are weighing on me. I haven't even gotten out of bed or opened more than one eye yet. Why am I doing this? What's the purpose? To what end? Why do I even need this? As you grow older, and even in your youth, these questions, they gnaw at us, don't they? Like there's some answer just evading us, just out of reach. If I could only. Only what? If you can picture what that what looks like well enough, maybe you would know the path to it. But why even need the path? Why is there anywhere to go to? What the hell is going on? Why do I ask these questions? Why? And so there's this kind of a straw man we set up, this idea of a solution that will bathe us in some kind of what? Liberation, release, awe. What is that? You know, before we were civilizations, before we were agrarian societies, even, you know, when we were wandering animals, there seemed to be forces around us that were outside our control. And yet, maybe we could influence them. Maybe if we appeased the sun god, it would come back tomorrow. So that when it got dark at night, we would become more and more certain that the sun would come back. Oh, thank goodness. Who's in charge of that? I respect you, sun god. Oh, thank you for coming back. We create these ideas to feel whole, to feel secure, to feel safe. Because remember, we are possessing machines. And the things that we cannot hang on to scare the crap out of us because we lose control. It hasn't rained in a month. We're going to die. Right? We have a word for it. Drought. You hear the word drought and something physical happens in you. Drought. We need to appease the rain gods. Please, please, please rain. Who are you talking to? And that becomes the question, doesn't it? So it's easy to see how religion kind of sneaks in there. Doesn't really have to sneak. It can come right in the front door. I know. Right? Anyone who offers a solution. From Ronald McDonald to whatever. A secret bowl of spaghetti. A toast with the face of a bearded man in it. There's a solution. Somebody cares. It's all a product of our minds. And for centuries, religions of some sort or another, even pagan, which religions grew out of, it's this need that we have to corral our sense of security resolved against meaning. Right? But those old devices, they don't work anymore. We're getting too darn sophisticated, right? We see through the manipulations and the organized religions and all of its forms. It's like Santa Claus. At some point, you go, there was some level of comfort in knowing that there was some jolly man bringing me stuff to make me happy. But we've become such inundated, completely controlled consumers that even though we recognize ourselves as addicted consumers, we can't seem to, there must be an app for that. There must be a product for that. There must be a pill for that. We're so ingrained in the addiction of the next thing will solve everything. That's a religion too. That's us fooling ourselves that we're just that far. If just the little 1 inch further and everything will resolve. That's how we run our lives. It's cataclysmic. Because that illusion is also falling apart. And we know it. And it's driving us mad, us being humans. So you have people that are reacting to that fear. They're becoming more violent, either with their mouths or their weaponry or whatever's handy. And their solutions are equally radical. Because if my solution isn't your solution, then you're my enemy. You're the one keeping me scared. That's a volatile situation, friends. So what are we doing? What are we doing? What are you and I doing as Buddhists? Are we putting our head in the sand? Are we practicing Buddhism because we are hearkening back to eras of our parents, grandparents, and our great-grandparents trying to find a solution, a disembodied meaning that will save us? Because that's not Buddhism. You do realize that, right? I mean, this whole channel and what I'm constantly hammering away at, even in these translations that are full of that throwback to salvation. Those words are not Buddhist words. They seem to be because the English translations created by scholars who are excellent at research but don't know how to freaking communicate effectively try to use words and disguise Buddhist wisdom into old, outdated comfort zones. They're not comfort zones? Really? I mean, at some point when I'm reading these translations, I'm thinking at any moment now, they're going to equate Shakyamuni Buddha with Santa Claus. Yep. He came from the north point of Mount Sumeru and brought gifts of chanting to everyone. Ugh. Come on, human beings. Are we really that pathetic? Yeah, a lot of the time we are. So, how do we deal with this? Because to be human, we're absolutely certain means something. You know, all the big questions, why am I here? What am I, what is my purpose? Blah, 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 blah. It's all about meaning. How does my life have meaning? And if it has no meaning, man, that just deflates you. Just saying that out loud, just why bother? I guess I'll just drift. Steal, kill, whatever, nothing matters. That's a very sad place to go, isn't it? In terms of Buddhism, those are the lower worlds. Insatiable hunger, anxiety, anguish, rage. It's all there in the lower worlds. It's nothing new. Why do we have to have meaning? Why is it even necessary? Well, in all the self-help books and the martial arts practices I've taken part of in my life, the different kinds of learning, everything from rebirthing to, believe me, I've done a lot of searching in my life. And I've been disillusioned with different schools of Buddhism too that seem to have, they were onto something. But then they got mystical on me. Screw that. That can't be right. And it turns out it isn't. Worshipping people. I mean, right out of the words of Shakyamuni, do not follow people. Follow the truth. Follow the teaching. Follow the law. Follow Myoho Renge Kyo. People are people. People do people, right? Human beings. They all want to be loved, all want to be accepted, all want to possess. Well, what do leaders do? They possess members. And they control members. Are you a member? Because if you're a Buddhist, you're not a member. If you're really a Buddhist, you're not a member. You may be part of a society of like-minded researchers into the realization of the ultimate meaning of life. That's a sangha. That's not membership. That's not a team. That's not a sect, an organization. That's just human minds connecting. That's what we're trying to do here. And so, what purpose Buddhism? What I would offer you is that Buddhism is nothing more and nothing less than a proper framework to understand our own minds and how to achieve with that mind liberation from all that other crap, the stress, the wanting to own, be owned, all of that. Because ultimately, as Buddhism teaches, as Shakyamuni, what a brilliant mind, 3,000 years ago, and he worked for it, understood that simply to realize the grandeur, the immensity of this life process that the universe is created of, to in order to perceive it, we exist. The mind that emerges from this apparatus exists, can witness. That's the only reason we're here. Isn't that a good enough reason? Wow. How precious is this momentary realization of life in its entirety? With those eyes, the Buddha eyes, look around at other sentient beings with an agreed, a participatory enlightenment, like minds, Itai Doshin. Isn't this amazing? Not isn't me amazing? Isn't you amazing? No, that's still attached. Isn't this amazing? It wells up inside of you into something we could find labels for. Compassion, enlightenment, love. But these words too fall short because we live in a world that's so inundated with words and definitions that the words, they're attached to seas of meaning and influences on our past and our thoughts. And be here now in this moment and awestruck by it. Sounds amazing. Hard to stay there. Because we're designed, this apparatus is designed to feed itself, to own, to compete. We don't need to compete. We need to celebrate. And what a thought. If the whole purpose for life, not just yours and mine, but my dog, the trees, the land, the earth, the universe, the galaxy, the solar system, its whole purpose is to celebrate being, to be. Come be with me. Let's be together. Language. It's a very slippery grasp of experience. But if that experience can be overwhelming and encompass all of life experience, then the why kind of just goes, meh. It doesn't, what do you mean why? Look at this. What do you mean how? Look at this. Purpose, this is it. The purpose of life is to live. Just live. That's amazing. The fact that you can perceive it, the fact that you can appreciate it, there's meaning. Can the tree appreciate being? Perhaps we could argue that. Language again. But certainly you and I can. Right? You've heard me say this before. Great trauma brings us to that realization very quickly. It fades. Right? You know, bad car accident or bad surgery or, forget the word bad, just any kind of trauma. Somebody leaves you, right? Whatever in life brings you great stress and anxiety. What do you seek? Everybody, what do you seek? Calmity. Just one person to say, I love you. Just a hug. Some sort of security of knowing. Knowing what? That you are being. That moments ago, being might have ended. Scared the crap out of you. I just want to know that I'm being. And waking up next to somebody, opening my eyes and seeing them in their sleep would be so immensely gratifying. Being. We know it innately. That's what original enlightenment says. Do you see? Buddhism, real Buddhism, is about knowing, understanding, and staying in that mind cognizance of just being cognizant. Being amazed by the very fact that at moment to moment, we keep on being. The amazement of that doesn't strike you in secular life. And by that, I'm not trying to infer that Buddhism isn't secular. That's the very amazing thing about Buddhism. It is a day-to-day reality. It isn't special. It isn't a religion. It isn't a pious other. It is what you and I perform in our minds, our own minds. No one gives it to us. Nobody takes it away. It's all on you. It is your actual experience of life, if you have the courage to really own up to it. Be in it. That's why Buddhism. Not because it imbues you with something that you didn't have before. Not because it's a special pool of knowledge. Everything in Buddhism points right back at you. Your mind and how you perceive. Just like your son or daughter or your sister or brother who's scared to death to fall asleep because there's something under the bed. At some point, it becomes obvious to you that there is no monster under the bed. That is a creation of your own mind. And that's what Buddhism says, very simply. That you're living your life with ad nauseum monsters under every corner, and they're all of your own making. Just stop doing that. Just stop doing that. And as you stop doing that, replace that mythology, replace that self-stressing anxiety with simple truth. We're here right now in this moment, this glorious, amazing moment. And it is utterly amazing. That in every single moment of life, the entire process of life is re-manifesting, albeit with tendencies that we can actually influence with this knowing nature toward being free, liberated from the monsters under the bed, which were never there. But we hung, grasped, right? So how does meaning progress through humanity? From fears of the sun coming up and being eaten, being hunter-gatherers, to later being in groups, and then new fears because of social interactions, control, possessing, letting go, just keeps amassing. Then we get religions doing the same thing, taking advantage of that to give us some weird sense of security by invoking participation with the group in some weird, mysterious way we'll never understand. Very minimizing of our potential and letting ourselves being completely taken over. I don't care if it's a god or a CEO or a type of learning, knowledge, doctors, psychologists, race drivers. Name an expertise and ask yourself, why is it such a valued thing to be a football player? And why does it have such emotional attachments? It's all about identity. It's all about some sort of elaborate justification for being. But the only justification you really need, the most amazing justification you really need, is to simply experience it. That's Buddhahood. That's Buddha-ness. Then the football player, no matter how excelled he or she is, they're just another you. They're just another person with stresses and worries and the same old stuff. Ultimately, they need to settle down and understand how brilliant it is for them to be alive. Part of this whole fabric of the universe. It's very equalizing. Suddenly the differences, they're subtle. We're not so invested in the difference anymore. Because ultimately it's the being that matters. That's the meaning of life. Life is the meaning. If you don't think that's enough, then you haven't really understood what I'm saying. Because when you chant, when you practice Buddhism, when you learn how your mind is doing this stuff, and you start to chip away at those things that you think are indelibly valuable, the meaning, the value, the intrinsic awe of your life starts to come to the fore, starts to gain brilliance. It will make you weep to suddenly realize how much you've invested in your life, in things, status, stuff. All of that's brilliant. We don't want to tear it down, right? That seems to be our option. Either I have it all or I need to tear it down. Nihilism or and all the while denying that you're in it right now. It's happening. You're missing it. Be in it. That's why Buddhism. It's not a solution. It's a realization. Yeah? All right. That's my little talk. How long did I go? Well, half an hour. Meaning. As we study Buddhism, we need to focus on meaning. All of these words are clues trying to capture our focus, our attention, find insights into our own creationist mind to settle it down, to go, oh, look here. Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. Thank you for listening. I'll see you again in the next one, okay? Bye for now.